Welcome to Say Yes to the Chef, where we talk about food and fun. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, Janice. How are you today?
I'm just fine. How are you?
crazy. My name is Kelly Taylor, and I am a certified chef and instructor.
And I'm Janice Escott, certified Cordon Bleu chef and instructor. And as usual, Kelly has
a quote
for us today to begin the show.
All right. So this is by Warner Leroy, who is, he was a restaurateur kind of guy in New York. He was really came out of theater. And so he made some very famous restaurants famous, Tavern on the Green, Russian Tea Room, Maxwell's Plum.
Oh, yes, all those famous places.
All those famous places that were really about how do you bring showbiz kind of to the restaurant world. So he was one of the first people to do that. So I had to explain it because then you'll understand the quote. So here's the quote. A restaurant is a fantasy, a kind of living fantasy in which diners are the most important members of the cast.
Oh, yes. That's very true. That's very, very
but,
true.
You know, before Warner, people just had restaurants. You know, they mm-hmm. wouldn't think about
places to eat.
Yeah. I mean, nobody thought about this idea of entertaining
food
kind of
is entertainment.
And even how you set up the restaurant, mm-hmm. you know, like put the bar where the people could see the bar, you know,
right, mingle.
And it was an interesting world.
And the arrangement of all the furniture.
Yeah. And of course, well, if you've ever been to Tavern on the Green or any of these restaurants, they're all about the look, you know. It's all about shiny brass and big chandeliers and, you know, crazy stuff. Well, actually, they're doing Tavern on the Green over. Somebody else bought it. And I think they opened it already, but I don't remember. Last time I was in New York, that I was talking to somebody about it.
Well, the reason we're talking about restaurants is because we have Victoria Hudson with us today, and she's from the Orange County Public Health Department. And so, hi, Victoria.
Hi, Victoria.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited about being here.
And we're excited about having you because there's so much to talk about.
I think it's really amazing, this program that you have here, because it brings together the community and the food culture that's really here. So I think it's really awesome that you've invited me.
Oh, well, of course. When I met you, actually, a few weeks ago, didn't I?
Yes, ma'am.
Over at Oasis when you were doing an inspection there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so that was interesting because Robert has been on this program also.
Yes.
And so it was really fun to meet you. And then we had a wonderful chat, and I thought, oh, this lady's got to get on our show.
I think it's a unique opportunity sometimes to have people, you know, they may be around when we have the inspection, and oftentimes people will come up to me and say, hey, you know, I've never been here when someone's had an inspection, and that was really neat to overhear that.
Mm-hmm. It really is an interesting thing to hear about and to know about because there's so many facets to an inspection of a restaurant.
Well, I appreciate your outlook on it. I've only been heckled once.
Yeah, well, you guys get a bad rap, you know, the health inspectors.
I was heckled by a customer one
time.
It was really like,
that's interesting.
I was taken back, I'll tell you. And so was the food service operator, the manager that was with me. He was like, what's going on here? It was a diner that, you know, didn't want to overhear what was going on.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yes.
He didn't want to overhear what was, what do you mean?
He was trying to enjoy his meal, and it was a barside service where he was seated, mm-hmm. and we were inspecting some things, and I was speaking to the actual food employee who was preparing some food here, and the man was, you know, kind of like, you know, can you move along, you know, can you not do that right in front of me? And so I had stepped to the side and, you know, began to speak more quietly, I thought, with the manager. And the heckler continued to heckle. It was a little, I just didn't know, you know, I thought, well, of all the public relations outlooks to have, how do I handle this? And another patron handled it for me.
Oh, that's interesting.
He stepped in and said, you know, let her do her job. It was very, very strange.
That is. That's very, very interesting. So what is your job? Tell us about it.
Okay. Cart before the horse. yes, I am an employee of the Orange County Health Department. I work in the Environmental Health Division, and I'm currently working in a position in food, lodging, and institution inspections. And I do a variety of inspection duties and compliance, you know, follow-up, dealing with all the permitted establishments in North Carolina and those things that are licensed in North Carolina that require sanitation inspections.
Such as?
Daycares, rest homes, things like that that aren't necessarily just right retail restaurant.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so actually what, do you have a title or is it?
I am an environmental health specialist. That is a position that actually has North Carolina general statute that determines that title and the prerequisite qualifications for that position.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's take a look at the purpose behind what your inspections are. What is the purpose?
Environmental health is with health department, the local health department. My supervisor is an employee of the health director at this point, you know. So public health is the focus and the mission of the local health department. So doing an inspection would be a function of the oversight or a function of surveillance in your community's public health. So because restaurants have a obligation to provide a wholesome product to those retail shoppers, there's an expectation of wholesomeness, and that's part of the public health surveillance in your community.
Mm-hmm. How interesting, though, the term surveillance. I think that it makes me kind of go, what do you mean, surveillance? You know, because that word is used in...
more of a criminal justice type
term. Yeah, like, whoa, we're being surveilled. But, no, I know what you're trying to say.
Well, statistics are constantly being generated by those entities that produce public health data. Mm. And, those efforts that are made towards inspecting certain items or, that those statistics. So surveillance to me is more of a statistical term.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I used to be a private investigator. Surveillance to me means you follow people around and watch them.
Guess what I do all day.
Yeah. Follow people around and watch them.
What are you doing
So you're
with
a
that?
Private investigator slash.
I wish I had a dollar for every time I said, what are you doing with that?
That's hilarious. What's the answer? Nothing? I'm not doing anything?
Well, not to get off the subject matter too much, but there's quite a bit of that. What are you doing with that? What do you mean? What are you talking about? Nothing. And I am super fortunate to have an inspection assignment where I work with some of the best operators ever. And I think we're getting away from that culture of, gosh, she's walking in the door. No eye contact. Because today,
hide.
Today's inspection style really requires asking a lot of questions, mm-hmm, including not just addressing the person in charge, but, really speaking to someone about, what are you doing with that?
Mm-hmm, 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 exactly. So
that is a surprise, I have to say. When you're in the kitchen, especially people who've never been in the kitchen, and the health inspector comes in, right? And you ask questions. And I have to say, people are surprised. I mean, the people working in the kitchen are surprised.
Yes.
Like if you've never been a part of an inspection, I guess they think you're just going to slink around or something. And
I'm going to
write
notes
down. I don't know. And then not say a word, So it's an interesting thing, like trying to change the perception of, what you do and that kind of thing.
So, Victoria, give us an idea about your background. How did this happen? What did you have to do to be qualified to do such a thing as inspections of kitchens?
I'm sorry, that was a funny question. How did this happen to you?
How did this happen to you?
Well, it happened like this. I went to college to get a degree in biology. And the college placement office, after I received my degree, sent me a referral for a local company where I was living in, it was a meat processing type manufacturing operation, mm-hmm, and they needed a position in quality control. Mm-hmm. And that was my first exposure to anything regarding the inspection process, because that company was also under the jurisdiction of the United States Department of Agriculture. And I had a close professional relationship with the inspectors that worked there. And it wasn't very long before it appeared to be a strength of mine to apply what was considered regulation to what I was observing. And one of the USDA inspectors suggested that I look at jobs in regulation, a regulatory type position. And I moved into that, and I was a federal food inspector for 5.5 years. And when I had some family, I was going to have another child, and the traveling that was involved with that, I had opened up my local newspaper, and there was this advertisement for an environmental health specialist. I did some research on that, and it was an easy transition into local food inspection. And I also worked in the on-site program when I did that as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Very interesting, from biology to this. Yeah.
Well, biology works, really important.
It?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It really
I'm kind
works.
Of an entomologist by hobby.
Ah,
so,
okay.
Often pest control and things mm-hmm. like that I find fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Probably more fascinating than most people, but I think it's a good blend when you have a scientific background. And, with our conversion to food code, using science as a better rationale for things, it really makes a whole lot of sense.
Oh, let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
The inspection process in North Carolina, what we refer to as the 2600 rules for anyone who's worked in retail food service in North Carolina for any time, it was about 22 to 26 pages of, standard regulation. In 2012, North Carolina adopted and fully implemented North Carolina Food Code. It's based on the 2009 FDA Food Code, and it went to 232 pages of regulation.
Well, now that makes sense.
Yes, let's just give it, 90%. But this was a huge move for mm-hmm. North Carolina and took away just a little bit of what had been ancient food science and replaced it with volumes of valuable, rational codes that say, this is really what we need you to do, and this is really in the best interest of people who consume food. So it was a great thing, I believe, for North Carolina. I've had the most fun probably in my career working with operators on these changes. And a lot of them were really incremental. They were doing it according to previous North Carolina rules. But now with the food code, that rule is still in place, but it works a little bit better the way we're working with it. Plus, it added a huge section of specialized process regulation, which was previously not in North Carolina rules. So there was this chance that the specialized process was going on and we didn't regulate it, scary, or there was this specialized process going on and we told them they couldn't do it.
Like what?
Yes. And what an example of specialized process.
Well, let me tell you.
All right.
Anything that involves smoking under cold temperatures, adding an additive that would be considered a preservative, or sushi rice.
Sushi rice, and just sushi rice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sushi, had this, huge change in popularity. And North Carolina rules didn't really address the fact that they wanted to keep their sushi rice out of temperature. And their argument is, well, I acidify it. I add, vinegar to it, and now it's not potentially hazardous. We didn't have any guidelines, and we didn't have any rules. We had people who had practical experience with it. We had people from other states. We had, there was food science behind it. We could agree with that, but without there being anything really in paper, what do we do with that? So, there were some changes to amount of time that they could have it out of temperature.
Yes.
But now we have the ability to really work with them, make sure what they're doing is great, it produces good product, and it's safe.
So all the processes that go with that are spelled out so they know exactly what that has to be.
Yes. If they cannot do it within the code, they can also get a variance to the code and provide how they're going to document that it is safe, mm-hmm. or provide some sort of scientific evidence that it is not potentially hazardous when they finish their process. Mm-hmm. And it creates a really great situation where they have the creative license to do things that are wonderful and beautiful food and completely safe.
Completely safe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And sushi, some people actually have said to me, oh, I don't want to eat that because it's raw. And of course, we know it isn't all raw, but the sashimi part of it is raw. And so how specifically is that regulated so that people know that it is safe?
Well, when you eat food that is raw, it puts a huge responsibility on where did you get that food from?
Yes. That's the first thing.
Very first. Having trustworthy food vendors, mm-hmm. Your food suppliers, that's where we're looking at that information. Where did this fish come from? Mm-hmm. And is there documentation that this fish was treated in a way that really reduces the likelihood of there being anything wrong with the fish, that it cannot be consumed raw. Mm-hmm. So there are certifications on the boxes. There are invoices. There are lists of suppliers that are approved. And each of our places that produces raw sushi type or sashimi, they are required to have all of those documents at all times and really be able to prove where the fish came from. Mm-hmm. So it's like one of those, it's like, you know, that's step one. That's prerequisite.
Right.
Can't get around that.
Yeah. Where did it come from?
There are other specialized processes that occur in restaurant settings that are really 100% the responsibility of the operator. If you have someone who is curing, you know, mm-hmm. they started out with a raw piece of meat of some sort, and they've added an additive, and they may be trying to extend the shelf life of it, or it may be for flavoring. But we have to work with them to really find out what their processes are. And again, I cannot tell you how wonderful it is to be in this area where I have learned so much about the way food is produced, and specialized food, foods of different cultures in general. You know, that there's a huge variety of diversity.
Plethora of different cultures in restaurants here. It's amazing.
Another example is when, you know, you approached me about the show, mm-hmm. and so I went to your website and I listened to several of the past podcasts. Mm-hmm. When you had John Singletary on.
Yes.
And he was talking about his charcuterie mm-hmm. and the whole garmanger kind of concept in restaurants. That his comments were so spot on about the way things are really handled. And the fact that he is in a teaching capacity, that's where, you know, that's what people need to hear. But one of the things he said, and I heard it because my ears were listening for it, but he was talking about it.
Yes.
And he made sort of a comment. I wish I could quote it exactly. But he sort of had this, you know, this really great, you should go to France, you should get you some. But there are reasons around, you know, local regulations that maybe that wouldn't be something you would see, you know, something like that. And I hope I'm not really distorting what he said. But guess what? You can totally do it. You can totally do it.
Here, you can.
Absolutely. Because if it cannot be done in refrigeration and it is done as part of a preservation method,
right?
Get a food science certificate.
Yeah.
Have it determined that it's not potentially hazardous. Work with the local health department on a HACCP plan that this can be done in safe conditions and produce a product that is 100% safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, that's what food code does for us. Yes.
Yes.
It does give you some guidelines. And if you're the first one kind of doing it, then you do have to make your own way. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's something that's true. I mean, if no one else is doing it around here and it's new to the, you know, the inspector, then yeah, you got to kind of have to go the extra mile and mm-hmm. because it'll be a new process and a new thing that people are trying to figure out where it fits in the code and how do you manage it and all of those things. The whole fermentation land, and all of that is interesting to me because I like to teach about fermentation and having to get explain more to me about the food code around fermentation and the certificate you were just talking about that you have to, you know, that what
well,
is
you don't
called?
You don't have to provide a, you know, some sort of product description. You don't have to go through the food, you know, this, testing.
What is that called, that certificate?
Well, it, they call it various different things, but it's usually just a food safety certificate of some sort that has rendered their determination is, the disposition is that this is not potentially hazardous when they finish the process. So, like, the fermentation thing is really something that I've learned a lot about in the past year. I've worked with several of the local food operators that have a fermented product. And I'm not just talking about, like, icebox pickles, but really have something that they want to produce through a traditional fermentation process at room temperature.
Right. That is how you normally do it.
Right.
Yes.
So, you know, pickling is one of these words, well... Okay. Tell me a little bit what's pickled right here. I mean, I really need to know what's in this bucket.
Yeah.
That's pickling. Yeah. It's dated 3 months ago.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and pickling.
It's in your dining room.
Yeah. Because I think of pickling as a cooking technique or a method.
It is.
Like, I don't think pickling as pickles. You know, I mean, that's how people think of pickles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and pickling that term. But pickling is a method that how you preserve food.
Right.
So you really do need to know what's in the bucket.
You just said the magic word. Are you adding salt and vinegar and putting this in the refrigerator for flavoring? Or are you adding salt and vinegar to this and you want to keep it longer than 7 days?
Yes, out on the tip. Yep.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's really how we determine whether or not something needs to have a little more investigation. And then that usually leads to developing and implementing a HACCP plan, you know, hazard analysis, critical control point plan, that determination during the flow of the process, where is the last place you can prevent something bad from happening. So with fermented product, you're talking about something that's ready to eat from stage one to the last stage, that's not going to be cooked. So the critical control point is, wow, what is the pH of this product when you finish your process? And is the pH such that we're not going to consider it to be a potentially hazardous food any longer? Anecdotally, for years, we just know, oh, adding acid to something makes it okay. You know, we're going to can something, we're going to pickle something. We know that adding acid... We've seen our grandmothers do it. We went to a 4-H program when we were 7 years old. We saw it.
Exactly.
So, you know, we add that vinegar or we add that acid to it and we say, oh, well, it's just not potentially hazardous anymore. We don't, you know, but, you know, what was the product to begin with?
So do you have to take the pH when, you know, like if you're serving food and it has to stay at a certain temperature, you have to take the temperature all the time.
Right.
So when you're serving fermented foods, do you have to take the pH throughout the time that it's being served? Like if you have some crock of something sitting there fermenting, sauerkraut or something, do you have to take the pH? Is that part of the HACCP plan? HACCP plan being like, okay, on this day you took it and this day. I don't know how it works.
That's well, the HACCP plans that I've worked with operators locally on the fermentation specifically, they have a tried and true recipe, which you know, predicated on the fact that they started with the same amount of raw product, the same amount of salt, and so forth.
Right.
And it fermented for the same amount of time. And that they know that, the example I know of in my head is 8 days. If they know on day six that the pH is not low enough, and that on day seven the pH is still not low enough, but day eight is a winner, then we're going to work with day eight only. We're not ever going to worry about day six and day seven again. And unless they want to review it and say, oh, I've got a new way of doing it, I can do it in 6 days. So we have to go on that bucket that has a date on it. It's at least 8 days old.
But what about older?
Older, keep going.
Okay.
Because you as you know.
I know, it gets better. But I didn't know if the rules change. Like,
no. The rules don't change at that point. Okay. Because at that point, once the pH is 4.6 or less, hands off, it's not potentially hazardous.
Okay.
You know.
So it can be there for as long as?
As long as it is consumer
appealable.
Yeah, because it appealing. Gets really strong. And after a while, I don't know that American palate can handle that.
And I'm just going to use space may be an issue so that you may not be able to keep, you know, years worth of fermented things.
Well, you would hope that you would have it. I mean, as a restaurant or a producer, you wouldn't want that. I mean, you'd want to have some turnaround.
Right.
And it's not like you're making wine. You know, I mean, you're not meaning to keep it out in the cellar for whatever.
Right.
Although somebody could, I suppose.
Probably.
We want them to use good manufacturing practices. That's the term.
Yeah. Okay. The official term.
Right.
That's interesting, though, for people to know, because, you know, around here in the South, people have been pickling and fermenting and preserving and smoking, like you're saying,
right,
you know, for years and years, just the way that it was always done back in, mm-hmm, you know, whatever. So
I love those little surprises, too. What are you doing today? I see you have a book entitled Pickling on your table. What are you pickling? Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's get a little conversation going. And I have a great opinion of myself sometimes, but I would like to believe that the operators that I have you know, super good relationships with, they don't mind telling me their grandmother's secret recipe, because I'm not going to go out and publish it, mm-hmm, but I just want to know, what did grandmother say about this? You know, and they've been very, very, very honest with me.
And one of those proportions.
We need to know.
We need to know.
Right.
Well, and exactly. I think that's the case now with restaurants. You remember a long time ago when you could say on the menu, it's like secret ingredient. What is up with that? I don't want a secret ingredient. As a diner, I don't want a secret ingredient.
Transparency.
I want to know what you put in there. Especially with people who have allergies and food concerns.
Well, that's the big thing now.
I don't think you can go around having secret ingredients anymore. I mean, I know it sounds kind of like whatever.
There are no secrets.
Well, it's like
cooking.
The consumer advisory on menus. Mm-hmm. You know, prior to September of 2012 in North Carolina, consumer advisory was really that weird sign at the meat market that said, if you eat raw shellfish, you might get sick.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh,
it was just a lot of words. It was usually hanging somewhere about the pork chops, you know, and
about the pork chops.
You Chickenosis. Know.
There's a sign about pork chops. Everything's okay.
Right. Yeah, do what you need to do. There's a sign hanging. So Food Code brought in this whole concept about consumer advisory. Well, for decades, we've been going to other places that have franchises in other states. And we would see clearly their consumer advisories on menus or on menu boards, you know, hanging somewhere. And North Carolina was slow to get to that process, but now I think we've got it down pat. And what it basically tells you is, consumer, there's an ingredient in this. Mm-hmm. It's this ingredient right here. And it may be served to you less than the required minimum internal temperature, if you want it that way. And you are taking the responsibility for that on yourself, because consuming raw or undercooked food may increase your risk of a foodborne illness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that has freed up a lot of people in, you know, who are developing menus. They want to do something a little bit creative, who want to do something a little bit special. Oh, I just really think that an undercooked quail egg would be delicious on this salad. You know, and then they just like, okay.
Medium rare hamburgers. It comes to my mind.
Oh, well.
Well, raw eggs are used in a lot of sauces and a lot of,
that's
you
right.
know.
It frees up mayonnaise. The sauce thing. Yep, it frees up the cooking temperature of mm-hmm. beef and pork.
Mm-hmm.
It exactly. really does a fish. Mm-hmm. You know, it really frees that up. If there's
Salmon.
Something that's just absolutely mm-hmm. wonderful, I want to present this. I want to bring it to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have a way of doing it, as long as I disclose what that ingredient is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remind them, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it really has done a great thing.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think of it that way. I didn't think of it allowing the chef to be more creative, but
I want to continue to promote that idea mm-hmm. you're saying.
Yeah. Yes. That's a really interesting idea, because I think when you read the sign, you think it's the opposite, that they're saying, oh, don't eat it, you know, because you could die or something. But really what you're trying to, I mean, that's how you could read it, you know.
Let's just say that there's a couple out there that kind of say that, and I'm not real sure where they got that idea. It wasn't me.
But, you know, I mean, you could read it that
does.
Way.
Mm-hmm.
So
it does.
But it goes back to having really good ingredients. You know, that's what it goes back to, is making sure that the chef is using really good quality ingredients to start with. So that's, it sort of all comes around. But traditionally, people have been using foods that are not at the proper temperature for a long time.
That's right.
And we've all survived, you know. So I think it goes to really understanding where you're getting your ingredients and making sure that they're from a reputable source. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just as we said in the beginning.
I love supplier. Yeah. I love supplier information. I also have a sort of an anecdotal way I sort of look at things, because it's all a linear relationship between menu and food storage space and delivery. Okay. So you decide, you know, like when we work with a new restaurant or a restaurant who wants to do a menu change, well, okay, do you have the food storage for that? And how often will you be receiving deliveries? So in this particular culture, you have a lot of people getting their food from local sources. Mm-hmm. And it may not just be, you know, a large truck coming up to the back door and dropping off, you know, several hand trucks full of food in boxes. You have, you know, deliveries are done in a more personal way in this community.
Personal is a nice way of putting it. I mean, Joe pulls up to the back with his pickup truck.
Someone jumps off the back of the truck and brings up something in a bag.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, it's like, you know, now that I know what to look for, I know. Okay. Yeah. I got it. The first time I was like, what is this? Who's this boy, and why is it in this bag? But there's this linear relationship, mm-hmm. you know, between, so you can really understand the magnitude of an inspection of fresh foods is a lot different than the inspection of foods that are frozen in boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you go into a lot of the restaurants around here, I'm telling you, it's pretty great. We are in a great place,
mm-hmm.
because there's not a lot of freezers in these restaurants. There's not.
That's nice. So they're using fresh, real food.
They have to.
Real fresh.
Mm-hmm. They have to.
That's,
you know,
great.
It's great. It is amazing what goes on.
And it means that there's more
so
work
good to
for
hear
them.
That.
You know, it is more work for the restaurant.
And
to
liability.
Do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they're making, you know, they're making the toppings for the pizza. Mm-hmm. They're making every sauce, mm-hmm. every salad dressing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something that's necessarily just coming in a box in the back door. So,
oh, that's good news.
It's great news.
It is. It really is. I'm glad I'm here.
First of all, you should know I love to eat.
Yes. Well, guess what?
We all love to eat.
We're part of that club.
Right place.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about that certificate that hangs on the wall that you put a number on, because in this area, there are lots of good numbers, and I think so anyway. And how does one get that number 100?
What is the number you're talking about?
Yes.
First, you got to start with that.
Start with that.
100 means nothing's wrong.
Yeah. Well, and you're talking about that number that's hanging on the wall. And where does it have to hang? Somewhere visible.
We refer to that placard as being a sanitation grade.
Yes.
Okay.
Or the grade card.
The grade card.
Yes.
And we all look for that when we go in.
I do.
I want you to look for that.
We do.
That's the takeaway message. Look for that.
Absolutely.
And if it's not there, ask about that.
You know, my kids, that's the first thing they look when they go in the restaurant. Where is
the grade?
They do.
Well, you know, children are going to be acutely aware of a score.
Yes.
So, you know, it's almost like, you know, like when the school lunchroom gets inspected, that is always like, I mean, you feel like a rock star in there. When you go to put that placard up on the wall of the school lunchroom and all the kids that are in the lunch line, they're like, yeah, that's awesome. They're high-fiving the lunch ladies. It's awesome.
Oh, I didn't
it's adorable. It's adorable.
Okay.
But the great.
You got to take a video, you know, and like and post it up. That would be really great video.
No, the risk managers will not allow that.
Oh, geez. Take all the fun out of everything.
I'll have to get disclosure statements from every parent.
That's true. Don't you fill out that form at the beginning that says my child can be used in any video, blah blah blah? We all have to fill out that form.
Who says no?
Nobody. That's why I'm saying you're okay.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll actually, my legal department will be calling you.
Okay.
So The score comes, it's a you know, calculated based on any violations. The violations are weighted in some point. The inspection sheet is actually two parts. There's a part of it that address the risk factors that make food unsafe to consume. And those are considered critical, and they either have to be corrected right then, or there has to be some sort of progress made during the inspection to correct it, like some phone calls need to be made and some people need to get something working. Or there could be a period of needing a verification visit. So those items tend to have the greatest points of deduction. They're debitable associated with them. And then the other half of the form is more about three-dimensional spaces and equipment, things like that. And they tend to be more what they refer to as a core item that still need to be repaired, but they're not necessarily something that's going to make food unsafe. And they are usually like half a point or a point. And so when there are violations that are observed during the inspection, we have to also see what the follow-up is going to be. We already have to plan for the follow-up. Then those points are deducted from a score, and before we leave, the score has to be posted. That is a requirement for North Carolina. When they adopted food code in 2012, they did not adopt the federal food code by reference. There are some North Carolina-specific items in North Carolina's food code. One is posting the placard. You won't find that in every state. In some states, it's really pass or fail. So if the doors are open, it's assumed okay. I don't want to talk about our neighbors to the south and the north. But
and some of them have letters.
Some of them have letters that
like
are posted.
A, B, C, D.
You know, Georgia puts the entire inspection sheet up with a magic marker number right in the middle of it. So
wow.
And, you know, it's also, I also find consumers are interested to know that inspection forms are public record.
That's what I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. People can go look at them.
And Orange County maintains our records through a third-party vendor who has a public viewer. So you can look word for word, typo for typo, every single inspection for many, many inspections for all the establishments in Orange County.
So tell us some of the common things that you see when you're talking about the two different parts of the form. Like, what are the common things that you see where points will come off?
Well, like the small points, the common things would be problems with the floors or the walls. It could be a construction thing, like, you know, they need to, you know, seal some baseboard, or maybe they did some work and didn't finish the work, and so there's some wall board that's missing, or, you know, those kinds of little cosmetic things. Equipment could be aging and have rust on it, and may need cleaning, something that's really just part of the non-food contact surface area. But the items that are a lot of points, you know, that are the most significant, they have to do with cleaning and sanitizing, hot foods hot, cold food cold, you know, making sure that things are date labeled so that we can have an idea that they are not maintaining refrigerated food for longer than the period of time that they should. Those things are really significant now, and it's about showing active managerial control on the process. Additionally, there are two points now that can be deducted if the person in charge does not have a certificate, or if they have a certificate and they cannot maintain active managerial control, they are also subject to losing the 2 points.
So how do you determine if they're not maintaining control?
There's a code for it.
Of course.
There's about 14 items. Yes, there's a code for it. And they're called person in charge duties. And several of those are always going to be in compliance, because like the first one is something like, you know, making sure nobody lives there.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Or having a consumer advisory when you need a consumer advisory, or having an employee health policy on employees reporting illnesses to you. Those kinds of things are usually prerequisite, and they should never really be called into question. Then if the hot food is not hot and cold food is not cold, and there seems to be an oversight in the manager's surveillance on the situation, then that could be something where you can establish a history of noncompliance, or you can look and say, oh, well, this person was not actively controlling the situation, and they could lose, you know, another, they could just get a comment, or there could be a 2 points deducted for that.
Mm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. You very seldom see in this area a low score, you know, something like below 90.
Yeah, you don't really see a whole really, lot.
I believe the local media
will find the ones that
has made it where it's, you know, it leads to, I don't know, almost like a public shunning, you know.
They do that. They shun.
There's some real negative reinforcement in that. Mm-hmm. I believe mm-hmm. that's, the restaurateurs do not want that kind of publicity. Mm-hmm. First of all, they don't want a publicity about a foodborne illness. That's the key.
Nobody wants
that's
no,
death.
No.
I mean, they just can't, you know, their business has a hard time to recover from mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, just with them, with different media outlets publicizing scores, whether they're good or bad, but really picking on the ones that may have had a bad inspection.
Mm-hmm. I was at a grocery store in Durham, and the food score was below 80. And
wow,
I was stunned and shocked by it, and had eaten there before. It had a restaurant thing on the side. And so I stood there and observed what I was looking at, and I saw the food server who was actually handling food and money in the cash register with gloves on.
That is one of my biggest pet peeves.
It was very disturbing to me that I saw that, and I looked at this situation and then said something about What are you doing? I'm not the inspector, but
you're
I want to know
consumer,
what you're
though.
Doing.
Yes, thank you, consumer.
and looked at the score, and I was, and the person just looked at me and said, "Well, I'm wearing gloves," and that was the bottom line.
Oh my!
And I was very amazed by that.
Oh, but my. That is so what they hear, you know, like you have to wear gloves, and that goes right in and right out.
Okay. So that so
I
want to talk about.
I'm putting
that.
The positive spin on your glove usage. Yeah. When food code was implemented, mm-hmm. that was something that was new. The previous North Carolina take on that was that you really need to eliminate bare hand contact with ready-to-eat foods. Do whatever you can through the use of tongs or deli papers or, you know, whatever you need, but let's really reduce any chance that bare hands are going to touch the ready-to-eat foods. Those are foods that are not going to be cooked anymore. So your only layer of protection at that point is just, you know, the tong or the deli wrap. The food code says absolutely not, no bare hand contact. It's not going to be allowed. It's just not permitted. We have way too much science to say people don't wash their hands well enough. They don't wash their hands long enough. They don't wash their hands when they're supposed to wash. So I think the takeaway message at that point was, oh, we got to get a bunch of boxes of gloves. Everybody's got to wear gloves, and they got to wear gloves whenever they do whatever. No, you have to wear gloves if you cannot prepare the ready-to-eat food using tongs or deli wraps or spoons or spatulas, some utensil. And it's impossible pretty much to make a sandwich without using your hands or a taco or, you know, skewer something, you know, like fruit. And those things went to the foreground, and people just started harping on the gloves. And, the glove usage really needs to be just ready-to-eat foods that you can't accomplish with a utensil. Mm-hmm. And you cannot put on clean gloves with dirty hands. And just because you have those gloves on doesn't make you superhuman and make you where you can handle money and then handle food. Mm. So there's been some deprogramming, I believe, working, you know, with groups on when are we supposed to really wear these gloves. Mm-hmm. And I have several really unique examples of places that realized that they didn't have enough staff, you know.
Because they need somebody who prepares it and somebody who handles the money.
That's right.
Yeah, I know. It's a novel mm-hmm. concept.
It's mm-hmm. It became mm-hmm. almost like, oh, my word, I never really thought about that. Or mm-hmm. maybe I need someone handling the burgers and a different person making the hamburger with the buns.
Yeah.
you know, finishing, garnishing this hamburger. Mm-hmm. You know, so yes, that actually brings out the need for more staffing.
You know, it's interesting. As a chef, a lot of chefs have a problem with using gloves to finish the plate.
I may know some.
I mean, it's sort of kind of a thing, just always a thing. Yeah, I don't know. I've heard this ever since I was in culinary school. You know, this idea of, you know, you just want to put a little, you know, garnish on the plate, or you want to do something at the end, a little sprinkle of some brunoise or something. And you don't want to use a glove, you know, you're cooking and then you just want to finish it. So what's your take? A little sprinkle of cilantro or something.
You know, I would never step on the toes of anyone that I may know that is a chef. But the same rules apply. So it's up to you as a chef to determine whether or not it's worth the risk, because your insurance agent may not want the risk. Your reputation may not want the risk. You know, so is it worth the risk? Use a spoon for those chives. Use a spoon.
The only problem is you can't control it like you can your finger.
You can't. And I know that when you're trying to stack up that little asparagus and like the shape of a teepee or whatever. You're trying to put it right on the top.
And you see that on television. You see the bare hands. And you see it a lot.
You do.
So.
Well, it is hard. I have to say, like if you're plating something and then you're talking, and I'm talking like fine dining, where you have everything on the plate has a exact spot,
and
you
want all of them to look exactly alike,
and you know, or you will get yelled at by the guy in charge, the head chef, which has happened to me. Then, you know, it's really hard to do it with, you know, a spoon, or it really is. And then with gloves, I think they get cumbersome too when you have smaller hands like I do, you know. They I don't know. It is. Yeah. I can see
there's
both
a huge
sides.
Selection of gloves for sale.
Yeah,
I know. But I hate wearing gloves. I will fully admit that.
Oh,
so
no, we have a glove hater.
I don't like that my hands get all sweaty, and I just can't stand it, and I can't feel the food, which I'm really like a tactile person. So I get both sides. I totally get both sides of the argument. The guy saying I don't need them because we haven't had them for 25 years or something, and look. You know, we're fine.
Yeah.
And then the food code, which of course says.
And then there's, you know, I feel bad for the sushi preparers.
Yeah.
Because the rice is sticking to the gloves and they can't get it off. And they're like trying to put it on the nori and it's just sticking like, everywhere.
Right.
And, and they're trying really hard to do it in front of me. You know, it's, you know, I understand. I totally sympathize. I don't empathize because I've not actually done that myself. But I sympathize with the situation. And, you know, again, it's just how much risk are you willing to take?
Yeah.
And then there's this thing that North Carolina has that I've spoken about, the variance. There are some variances that are possible to, you know, work with things when you want to do something that's outside of the code. There's nothing to say an automatic no. It's prove it.
Prove that it doesn't harm someone?
Mm-hmm.
Right. How do you prove that?
Well, some of those hand contact ones that I've read from other states and wanting those kinds of variances actually require, you know, you to, I think there's some other verbiage in that also in North Carolina is about providing the HACCP plan, providing a good prerequisite program for hand washing hygiene, and having some way to document that, and providing like a health insurance policy for employees that are sick. You know, there's, you know, it's like, you know, a lot of paperwork and a lot of things that could possibly go into that. But yeah, that's one of those things that nobody's really tried.
Because, you know, if you look from the chef's point of view, they know too it's bad business if people get sick. So they don't want to do something deliberately that is going to harm one of their, you know, patrons. So it's not like either side is trying to deliberately get away with something, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And everyone's trying to do it in a good way, but just in a way that suits them, you know.
And that's exactly how I want people to think about it.
Yeah.
But you were talking about the placards on the wall, right? You know, and there's the score, and there's, you've seen low scores, and as a consumer, you've made some adjustments in yourself, probably, when you see a score that you don't necessarily...
I walk away.
You walk away.
But yes, what's the low score? Like, what if somebody's looking, what's a bad score?
Well, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. Because when you're a consumer and you're looking at the placard to assign risk mm-hmm. to your consumption, well, then you kind of look at the menu mm-hmm. and decide whether or not it's all fresh ingredients coming in the back door.
But the people don't know. I mean, you can't... Most people...
I don't know that people don't know, but I think, you know, I'm not going to call any specific examples, but if you're talking about large-scale franchise, more than a billion sold.
Well, but not fast yeah. foody kind of places, but just like
but
a
still,
restaurant.
But
like
still,
a
any, the same
mom
rules.
And pop thing.
It's the same rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? But I would mm-hmm. say most people might not know what goes on in the back of the kitchen and what's really fresh and what isn't. You know what I'm saying? I think
right.
most consumers aren't aware of
well,
what really
Well, North Carolina
happens.
Chose to keep the scheme that between 90 and 100 is an A, and between 80 and 89.5 is a B, and C is a 70 to 79.5.
What do you have to get to close down?
Less than a 70. It revokes your permit automatically, and you have to start over
from square
one.
Do you have to close
one.
Right then?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
okay.
So when I saw that in the 70 category, I was upset because I maybe I know too much, first of all.
Absolutely.
But the interesting mm-hmm. thing was that when I did see that it was under 80, I felt that there was really no excuse for that in that particular place. And it was just...
Why did you think that about that particular place?
Because I had been there before when the score was not that low.
Okay, so they're capable.
So they are capable mm-hmm. of a higher score.
Right.
And so...
was there anything special about their menu? That really could have really created a hazard.
That's a very good question.
Because I think that's what customers
yes,
need to sort of look at, and they say,
"That's true.
What is it? Is this a place that prepares pizza? Is this a you know? And why is their score low?
Well, there was actually,
they make pizza.
Yeah, yeah
well,
that's not a hard one to figure
this
out.
This is
how
a
to
place that makes deli sandwiches. Mm-hmm. You
no,
know,
this was a place that prepared fish and meats.
Well, then they need to pay
attention. And they had hot. They had them stored in hot places. You know, it's a
like a steam
it's
table.
A steam table uh-huh. kind of thing. And then I wondered too if okay. the steam table was
okay.
not
so
up to temperature or whatever it was. I was not privileged to know that, but when I saw that score, I kind of looked and thought, you know, I just really don't want to eat here.
Okay, so when you're looking at, as a consumer at something like that, mm-hmm. is it a place that hot holds for mm-hmm. customer self-service?
Mm-hmm.
There's a
no,
whole,
it was not that. It was,
sort of thing.
And it was not self-service. It was
we didn't even talk about buffets, which,
I
oh
know.
My God, that's like...
I know, we need to have
like
you...
like a whole hour
I know.
To explain buffets.
We need to have you back because we're running out of time.
We are.
There's
and you know,
so much
there,
to talk
there,
about,
there
Victoria.
There really is.
There
Thanks.
Really is.
We got
to. Yeah, we have to.
Oh, I do have to say. So we did have one caller, Joe, who called in who okay. wanted to talk to you. But I frankly, we don't have to take call-ins.
Yeah,
so I told him I would say. He just wanted to tell you that he thought that when we talked about the heckling, he was trying to stick up for the heckler. That he didn't want to hear that stuff out in the front of the restaurant. He wanted to take it in the back. He thought you should take it in the back and talk about whatever it is that their problems are in the back and that you're working on the taxpayer's dime and we don't need to hear it, which I thought was, I can see its point, but also as the taxpayer, I want to hear what the heck you have to
well,
say.
Well, that's because we
you know,
know
because
we're curious.
Okay. All right.
So you got a minute and then we have to get off.
Yeah.
So
I will take that comment under advisement.
Okay.
And I understand that there are people who don't necessarily want to hear all of it,
mm-hmm.
and they're there as a consumer, and I respect that. But I am doing a job, and if part of my inspection happens to be in the dining room or in a service area that is viewable from the dining room, I will be done in just a minute. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Victoria, thank
oh,
you,
so
thank
great.
You, thank you. This was just great. We would definitely have
I
to
do
have
want
you
to
back.
Talk about buffets.
Yeah, we have...